Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Cesar Romero. And today I have the pleasure of having Kyle on the podcast, Kyle Decker. And he's the co-founder of the Riley Decker Companies, basically providing a one-stop shop solution for clients and their staffing needs. And he's been in the industry for, I think, close to 15 years, if my math is correct. And in this episode, you know, we want to share Kyle's journey into the staffing industry, how he got to where he is today, and also provide to anybody listening that is in staffing, either has been in business for a while or considering starting their own staffing business. We're going to get into some of his advice. But Kyle, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no. Thank you, Cesar, for having me on. It's a blessing to be here, and hard to believe. Like I said, 14 coming up on 15 years in the staffing industry. So feel old.
15 years. So, and we'll dive into that. But I wanted to start off with, there's a quote on your LinkedIn profile, and I'm going to make sure to read it because I don't want to get it wrong. It's by Danny Mayer. You know, business, like life, it's all about how you make people feel. It's that simple, and it's hard. You know, out of all the quotes out there, you know, why do you pick this one specifically? And why do you think, in your opinion, this is something that's simple and hard to do?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, I think, you know, in concept, it's simple, but in reality, in people, we're complex, you know, human beings, right? So the simplicity of it is, you know, it should be that easy, but it's not. And I've learned that in the staffing industry, you know, related to my day-to-day, you know, from a business perspective, let alone, you know, personal, you know, dealing with people. I love it. There's nothing better, but it's such an unpredictable, you know, we're all different. We all come from different backgrounds and different abilities, and, you know, but that's what makes it great. But so complex. And I find that as the challenge that drives me every day. And I think that quote just shows both sides of, you know, at times it can be simple and at times it can be so complex. But that inevitably pushes me every day, I think, to be a learning leader, continue to evolve. I think hopefully my gratitude and selflessness to the differences of all people for diversity and inclusion is so important. I think more than ever, to try to understand that. And I find that so fascinating. We're all so different, right? Even talking to you today, just meeting you for the first time, right? You told me before the podcast, some of the things you've gone through personally. You know, I love that. I love to learn people's journeys and stories, but that does create some complexities, right? To trying to find a way to connect, but inevitably that's life, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it.
I love you mentioned that you're a serving leader, and I think we need more of that type of leadership. You know, leadership that is willing to learn every day, be humble, right, and be vulnerable. I think it's much needed to say so. Thank you for being one of those leaders that is taking the lead on this type of leadership, especially in staffing, right? I feel like sometimes in staffing, there's a lot of like a wall sometimes, right? Coming across as like strong and not vulnerable. And speaking of staffing, right? How you got started in staffing based on the research I was doing, 2009, 2008? You know, how was that for you? Like, what was the, I guess, the fork on the road for you at that moment where you decided, you know, this is something that I want to try and then I'm going to make a career out of it?
Yeah, well, Cesar, like, go back to your point of servant leadership. That's actually at that point in time, when I graduated college, I got into, people laugh now, and I do still myself, my girlfriend's father, who's now my father-in-law. And no, I did not marry him because of the staffing business, or her, I should say, him. I guess I am married to him too, but Todd Riley's his name. He's been a great partner and mentor, and super fortunate to have great people. You know, you can't be successful without great people. Mm-hmm. I think that comes back to the servant leadership part of, you know, really leading from the front. I was blessed. I had no other option because we were a startup company in a down economy, right, where furloughs and layoffs and people, and rightfully so, were like, why are you getting into, you know, you have options, you know, leaving the university I graduated from, Miami University. you know, had some employment opportunities, but I decided to go this, you know, entrepreneurs route because, you know, he had previously started a staffing company, had sold it, and he had told me, you know, inevitably there's an opportunity here to be part of a startup that could lead into something. And he knew my DNA coming from, you know, student athlete at college athletics at Miami University football team and translating that into business. And so that's where we started, in that back corner of a mall plaza, the paper sign. I actually have a reminder here on my desk for those that are watching online, but this is where we started, you know. Wow. And wasn't up here, but it was a paper sign and half of it was blown over. And we were the job store before we were rebranded as the job center. And it just said the job because the sign was actually top right corner was blown off and you couldn't see the store. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those are the true humble beginnings that, you know, where I started. And inevitably those were, as you talk about the challenges and tribulations, that was right off the rip. I mean, right off the rip, you know, starting in a startup company in that time. And so one, I learned to be a servant leader because I had to do it all. I had no other options. And then I'm so glad I had it no other way. And two, the trials and tribulations, it was super adverse. So I had a chance to respond. Most people, either you fight or you fly away, right? The fight or flight mentality. And thank goodness for great mentors and great parents that brought me up to not quit. You know, there's, trust me, it crossed my mind. There's sometimes I'd go home and I thought long and hard about, man, is this really the right opportunity? You know, I think I took the road of the hard road versus maybe going into a Fortune 500 or 100 company I was offered versus doing the startup staffing thing. And thank goodness I did not quit.
Can you describe one of those moments where you were just thinking about quitting and reconsidering your career choice? Right? Because there's a lot of people out there these days that are on that boat, right? Especially when you hear all about the Great Resignation, the Great Reshuffle, and how you should take advantage of it. I'm curious what your thought process was there, and you know what kept you going.
Yeah, no, and I love. That's an employee market. I mean, it doesn't make it easy to be in a staffing company, but I believe I love that people are empowered to have options. I think that's super important because I did, and I chose that option. But what I would say, you know, also it's easy to, when adversity hits, like I said, it's easy to quit. It's easy to, you know, fly away per se, the fight or flight,
right.
To go in even in college athletics, they talk about transferring, or in business, the great, you know, resignation, where people are quitting faster, and that's okay. But what worked for me, to answer the question, and I'm glad I persevered and stuck with it, is when adversity hit, I had a vision, right? You know, when Todd had brought me on, he told me what he did at his previous organization. Right. And, you know, they built, which is great. They built a $20 million organization over about a 10-year period. You know, we were on a run rate to go to, you know, I'm a competitive person. At that point in time, everyone's like, Kyle, you're not going to get past one. You're not going to get past 1 million. We were under 1 million sales. Then it was, you're not going to get to 10 million. Well, there's no way you're better than Star Personnel, his old agency, at 20 million. Next thing you know, we're at 100. Now we're at 150. Now we're getting to 200. Now bigger is not always better. That doesn't define me as a person or our team as people. But what are we? We're growing a platform where we change lives. We're, you know, impacting people in a positive way. And we're a passionate and competitive group. We want to be the best at what we do. And that's a big thing for me. And I knew I could do that here. So inevitably, when I thought about quitting, I realized that I was raised, and in me personally, I had pride that I knew that I could be successful here. And it wasn't because of the organization or the opportunity. It was because of me. And I was going to find my way to make sure that I inevitably had success, which I found out, coming from team sports, you got to have a lot of great people. So it's not about me and I, even though I just said that, it truly was, hey, I'm going to lead the way. I knew I could be a leader. I knew I could find a way, but I needed a team and great people to work with and to lead forward. And so that's where I try to be a servant leader and then just compete, you know, and there were some tough times. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious about, two things, you know, taking a company from, you know, 2 million to 10 million, 10 million to 50, right? What are some of the biggest, I guess, changes that you have to make? You know, because there's, can't remember the author, but there's a book called What Got You Here Won't Take You There. I believe that's the title, right? So from your experience, you know, and from people in the audience listening, like maybe they're at the 2 million mark and they want to take it to 10 million, right? Like, what are some of the changes that they might have to make in order to make that increase, right? Or should they even consider, right? Because as you said, right, like sometimes bigger isn't always better, right? But we might be drawn to it to vanity metric of like, hey, you know, we have more revenue, right? But it might not be the better. So what advice would you have for people in the audience considering scaling that growth?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be, my advice going from 0 to 200 million was you got to want it, you know, you got to be, and that means you got to have risk. You got to invest forward, which isn't easy. You got to be aligned with resources. You got to, you know, have a plan. I think people desire, I listen to a ton of podcasts and listen to content and I hear the desire, a lot of talk, but
right.
actually when you have to walk it, you know, when you have to write a check, I always tell people, and I've invested in other things, when you actually write it on paper, you know, you cut that check, you wire that money, you do different, it becomes real, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things that are conversated that are talked about, but then the reality hits and they didn't really want it, right? Mm-hmm. I knew in my 20s when I started it and then we started going and I saw it. You know, I was just dating now, married to my beautiful wife, and I got 3 kids. But at that point in time, I wanted to compete. I wanted to grow it. I wanted to be, and yeah, maybe it was vanity. I want to be better than Star Personnel, his previous agency, because I knew we could do it. And I knew I could be better than the competitors in the local market. And then we had opportunities to scale. And our partner said, hey, we want you in this city, this location. Here's the opportunity. And we had a choice, truthfully. I think a lot of our partners would have said, hey, we want you here. I mean, we've kind of got a little push to say, hey, we want you in these markets. You're doing a great job. We want you to be a national supplier for us. So we had, you know, based on performance of our team, and we were once again blessed with great people, we had opportunities, but we wanted it, right? And we were willing to invest forward. So I think a lot of people, you know, it's risk. It's great because my partner is risk adverse. I like risk. I like to be aggressive. So we balance each other out.
Yeah.
But you got to be aggressive, in my opinion. You got to be smart, but I play to win and I play aggressive and I've lost. You don't hear a lot of the losses. In the losses thing that keep you up at night, you hear a lot of the successes, right? But there's been losses along the way, but you learn from them and then you get back up and you go. And really for me, money's one thing, but I love to compete and I love to be around people that I enjoy working with. And those are the two things. I've had opportunities to sell this company many a times because people value it and they come in right. And they throw out numbers. But if I wanted that, I would have sold it in the last 12 to 24 months at an all-time right. high. But we did. I didn't want to, and I told my partner I don't want to, and he doesn't either. We have more of a mission on hand than just revenue. Now that is part of it, right? It's a business. We want a viable business where people can have success, including ourselves. So I'd be remiss not to say that's not part of it. But I think the chance to compete, the chance to build a platform where people have success, to work with people that you enjoy working with, I just love it. I mean, I have a blast.
I can feel your passion. Now, to a couple things as follow up to that. You mentioned losses, right? And what's a favorite loss of yours, whether professionally or personally, that taught you a very valuable lesson that you still apply to this day? And yeah. The second there, as follow up to that, is you mentioned you're committed, right? Which is great. But how do you find teammates that have the same level of commitment as you, right? And you know, being in staffing, right? That's probably one of the things that you are in charge of doing for your clients, right? So yeah, let's talk about those.
Yeah. So the first aspect is the losses, and there's one that sticks out to me very vividly that I still think about often is one of our first expansion moves, which was more, I wanted to be in this city. So we had expanded, we had an opportunity to expand in Chicago, but the opportunity to be the base foundation, the client, was a lower need, lower revenue opportunity. And we went there because I wanted to be in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Didn't do it the right way. Didn't expand, do the due diligence. It was an ego. Ego got in the way of like, okay, we can go to Illinois. We go to Chicago. That's where we want to be. Well, that's the ego got into play in that one.
Yeah.
Versus it being, but it was the best thing that happened because it burnt, it hurt. We lost a ton of money. Mm. And that was early on in my career. And then every time we've moved since then, trust me, we do, we make sure there is a very well organized approach plan. And, but without that loss, I don't know if we would be where we'd be today. Truthfully, is that it stung and it was early enough where it was eye-opening and humbling to say, okay, hey, you know, this is a loss and this was on me. It was square on me. There's no one else. I mean, and it hurt, you know, but I learned as a leader at that moment of how to expand moving forward. So I'm very thankful for that event. And then the second piece of it is, how do you find people that are as committed as I guess me? Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, obviously I think any company is looking for people that are passionate and driven. And, you know, we value three things: gratitude, selflessness, high expectation / energy. And we really try to find that in people. I've found one of my focuses in the last couple of years, because our scale is finding those people that really have those three characteristics. And we try to stick to that. And it's not easy. It's not easy in an interview process to find,
right,
all right, are you a grateful person? Are you a selfless person?
Yeah.
You know, do you have, hold yourself to a high standard, yeah, or do you have high energy in our business?
Those are hard to quantify.
Very hard to quantify.
Yeah.
But how do you look in it? You know, I think from a overall people, you know, I look at, a body of work. What do they like? What do they don't like?
Right.
You know, were they involved in some sort of, you know, event, you know, some sort of maybe philanthropy, sports, athletics, something to show that they are committed to changing our lives, which is part of our mission. And then are they willing to, you know, work, you know, in our industry and the industrial staffing market, it's all, you know, I think the staffing industry in general is a challenging industry, but in light industrial, it's high volume, it's a lower margin business, right? Yeah, it's a higher touch business. And you got to have stamina and energy to approach it each day. And then you're talking to a lot of people. So I think to go back, Caesar, to answer that question of how to find people, I don't know if there's a perfect formula. I think we're relentless in our approach to try to find those people. And we find them, we go hard. When I find them, what does it take to try to get this person on the team? Because I think they can win. And we've done that. If you look at our management team and look at the great personnel we have in our centers, I think we've done a really nice job. Obviously, it could always be better, but we're growing for a reason, is because of our people. You know, we have great partners. Yes, we do. We have great associates, but our internal staff are just really good people that are executing in their passion and purpose every day.
I love that. And speaking of that, right, what type of systems do you have in place in terms of either coaching your team or providing feedback? You know, what's a feedback loop look like for your organization that we can share with our audience and looking to improve on those systems, right? Because that's key, right? If you're looking to scale a team or a company, right? Like having those systems in place. So I'm curious.
Yeah, well, one example, you know, we're really excited about being the best place to work. It's great to publicize that, but what are actionable, tangible takeaways that I can share that do that? Well, for instance, we're reviewing our handbook. We sent out to the whole company just this week. What changes would you want to make on the handbook? Not so we say yes to all of them, but we're going to garner all the feedback, right? The feedback loop you're just talking about, and we're going to, you know, evaluate it and then try to make change where we deem necessary and let the everyone within the organization have a voice. So I think we do a lot of surveys, which is important. You know, we have an internal performance tracking system called iReview that we document, you know, both constructive, but more importantly for accolades and for the great things our folks are doing. And we, you know, evaluate each, you know, a lot of times each month, we're having monthly evaluations for some folks. We have quarterly, we have yearly for sure. But we're trying to create that feedback loop. And then we empower our local operators to even increase that. That's just as a corporate entity. And then down into the local levels, try to really make sure there is a monthly review done, just a touch base. And, you know, that's super, super important. Once again, is to get intelligence from the folks that are going through those events and trying to become better. So as we scale and get larger, that is a challenge, right? Is to try to remove red tape that it creeps into an organization and empower our local operators to hopefully make that environment better, which is not easy. It's not a perfect situation, but I think the effort is there, the mindset's there, and it's just a matter of execution.
It's not easy. But as you said, right, it's about the culture, the mindset's there, you know, the rest is just systematizing it and making it operational. But I think the key in what you mentioned is constant communication, right? Constant feedback, you know, top, bottom, bottom to top, asking questions, and making sure that the expectations are clear, right? That the metrics are clear, right? Like, here's what we're looking to achieve in Q2, Q3, or you know, for the year. You'd be surprised how a lot of organizations don't pay attention to this, right? And then they wonder, you know, why things are not going the way they had hoped, right? And most often than that, there's a gap in communication, right? In setting those expectations. So thanks for bringing that up, because I think that's super important, right? Especially as you're looking to scale your staffing organization. Now, one thing I wanted to make sure that we touch on, because you mentioned philanthropy, and I immediately thought about Chatterbox Sports and the work that you're doing with the local community and the young athletes, right? How did that came to be, you know, what's your vision, right, in terms of the impact?
Yeah, no, great question. And for me, being a student athlete growing up, you know, sports gave me the ability to have a successful business. We're a base foundation. Mm-hmm. So the principles of, once again, like we talked about, not giving up. Well, that's showing up to practice on time. It's being respectful to coaches. It's being a great teammate, right? It's being selfless, hopefully, for a teammate in a sport. It's committing to hard work. You know, I've had a lot of great coaches that push you past the limits when you don't want to run, do sprints, or get up at 5 a.m. You know, I was committed to my teammates. I was committed to the program. I was committed to winning as a team, not as an individual. And that just did translate so well over to staffing. And I'm thankful for that background, first and foremost. And so when I had the ability, you know, multiple different platforms I'm involved in, to invest into Chatterbox, it's a high school platform that streams. And I thought, how great is it that these two guys, Trace and Sean, great guys, wanted to try to create a platform to cost effectively, you know, be able to give through an app, a mobile app, a good broadcast and a visual to anyone across the country. So if I'm I would love when I played in high school for my grandparents out in, you know, across the country, or aunts and uncles I had in California or Atlanta, Georgia, to be able to view the game. And the quality of the product is, in my opinion, is pretty good from a high school level and the folks that we have. So when I learned about it, they needed some resources. I thought it was a great opportunity for me to really give back in a way. It's not really a high school sports is interesting from a revenue perspective. So it is more of a philanthropy type situation. And then the podcast, you know, my podcast, you know, we have not monetized the podcast. We've had a lot of interest, had a few things here and there, but we realized, like, you know, we really want to give back. The Underdog Podcast is about trying to show an example of someone overcoming adversity to have success. And I feel, you know, just like starting the business in the back corner of the mall plaza or being a walk-on and earning a scholarship, that anyone can overcome maybe a perceived long shot or overcome adversity to have success in their life. And we launched under a podcast a couple years ago, and it's the same thing. We try to impact or change one life each episode at a minimum. That's what we do. And I sure love it. It's a passion project and very excited about the future of the Underdog Podcast.
I just to say, I've listened to two episodes, right? It's been a busy week with travels, but those two episodes have been so impactful to me. And just listening to your guests hit rock bottom, and from there evolve into an even bigger version of themselves, right? So if anybody here, not sure what happened there. Anybody here interested in getting inspiration, please listen to the Underdog podcast, because I guarantee you will not be disappointed. And speaking of the podcast, Kyle, what has been the biggest impact in your, I guess, personal brand, in your business, you know, since starting the podcast? Because I think you're one of the few people in the staffing industry, at least from what I know, that has a podcast. Like, should other leaders start a podcast? You know, what's been the value to you from starting the podcast?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny, because some people, which I respect, they were, well, that puts you at risk, right? As a CEO and the leader of an organization, because, you know, I'm talking about depression, anxiety, overcoming alcoholism, disabilities, right? You're not supposed to always talk about these things, right? Because it's risk. If I said the wrong thing, but for me, I've never operated in fear. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I'm an imperfect person, but my goal was to not operate in fear and make a bigger impact, and not allow the size and scope of organization to, you know, limit my voice and ability to create a positive platform. And so, you know, I don't know if it's right for everybody. You know, it's not a selfish intent by any means. It was actually started up to be, you know, to create and help others, and really learn from. It's an ability for me to get away from the quote unquote day-to-day grind and talk to people. I think there's a lot of gratitude I have for some of these stories that I learn about. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful. Reminds me that life is short, and, you know, after an episode, I get right back to work. And I tell you, I have a lot fresher mindset. I think I'm a better leader because I step back into the arena of staffing with, I think, a different mindset. Mm-hmm. After I talk to someone in their story, just like Shane Snow, you had mentioned, overcoming homelessness to being a world-renowned author and speaker. Mm-hmm. And you just, you know, I remember getting off that podcast a couple of weeks ago and just going out into the office here, and just I just had a refreshed mindset.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah. How could I was, you not?
I was energized, I was motivated, I was felt like I learned.
Yeah.
To answer these, I don't know if the podcast is for everybody, but I would tell them not to be afraid if they wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think it takes time and commitment, and it's, once again, it's away from building maybe quote unquote the business revenue. Right. It's away from doing certain things, but for me, I think it's made me personally a better leader, because I've learned from a lot of different people of all different walks of life.
I love that. And you're right. It all depends, right? It all depends on your circumstance. It all depends if you can keep it consistent, right? Because that's the number one thing that deters anybody creating content, is can you keep it consistent, right? Because, you know, a couple episodes or a couple posts, that's not going to cut it. And for me, the impact has been when I listen to the episodes, I feel like I'm getting to know you, right? Through your guests, through your interviews, listening to your voice. And we all know that we all buy from people that we trust, right? So if you can build trust through the podcast, through your content, and people can find out more about your staffing companies, right? It's a way to build the brand, to also impact the business in a very indirect way, right? So, at least for me, right? I feel like, I know you, right? Which is kind of strange to say, but not really, because we're in 2022, and you know, we're sure. Everything is online these days.
And just to touch upon that, I think it's, you know, I'm pretty open, you know, through I've you know, talked about things that I've struggled with early on in my career. Anxiety was at an all time high for me and debilitating. You know, I in my early 20s, like trying to grow this business and dealing with the pressures of it and different things. I never had an anxiety attack, and I had one. I didn't even know what anxiety was.
Right.
And so I'm starting to open up. You know, I've had some struggles with alcohol here and there that I talk about. And, you know, coming up on 3 years where I haven't had a drink, and, I'm okay with that. Once again, most people say, why are you talking about that? That's going to hurt your business. It's going to be this, but I am who I am. I'm proud about it. You know, I've struggled just like anyone else, and I'm here to try to be a servant leader and to try to work once again, find people that are, maybe imperfect themselves that want to come here. They feel home and they want to compete and have fun and work hard and do great things and go places that they've never been before. And once again, we're not for everybody. And I'm not for everybody. I understand that. And, but I am who I am. And I think this has helped me open up because it is lonely in a role at times, to be a CEO and a leader, because you don't know what to say to who and when at times. And sometimes, you know, people, you know, shy away from that relationship with me because of my role, maybe, or whatever the case may be. But this is also a way for me and other leaders to, you know, to have a healthy conversation about who we are. And I enjoy it. I enjoy allowing people to, if they want to know about me, they can definitely listen. And I definitely drop things over 100 and whatever, 20 some odd episodes now. You know, I think I've definitely learned a lot about even myself talking through it with other people. So it's been healthy from that standpoint too.
I love it. Yeah. Like we're getting to know you through your episode, through your podcast. And what you said, right? If it's for everyone, it's for no one, right? So you got to stand your ground with what you believe in, what your values are. What are some of the biggest trends that you're following closely right now in the staffing and talent acquisition space?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, summing off some of our industry conferences, you always come away and you're like, okay, I got all these different things. Yeah. Your information overload. But I think, you know, the answer to the question, you know, that's a deep one because there's so much, but I would say some of the things we're looking at, we're looking to diversify our business. We're going to be launching a healthcare division here coming up here in the next couple months. Our engineering skill. Yeah. Thank you. Our engineering and skilled trades is really starting to take off. So some of our brands in the Riley Decker portfolio, the job center continues to scale. I would say probably one of the most widely discussed topics is the completely remote work, hybrid, or all in office.
Yep.
I would say that's something I'm keeping a pulse on. You know, now on the industrial side, there is a touch to our clients still, but with some of the other divisions of what we can and cannot offer, you know, some of the benefits to make ourselves more attractive, like PTO, 401k, different things. We want to be an employer of choice in all different facets. So I think we're keeping a close pulse on what the market is doing as far as benefits in attraction to work for Riley Decker and the staffing companies we have. I think we build the environments. I think there's a lot of intangibles we bring, but also obviously the other items that are ever so important to being an employee here. So I think those are some of the hot topics. Obviously the supply chain, the COVID piece, you know, the war in Ukraine, all the topics that are kind of widely discussed. I mean, I think those are things that we're keeping a close pulse on. As technology advances, we're trying to always keep a close pulse on that, right? Of what's the newest, latest, and greatest technology, and how do we become more effective and efficient in our tech stack and our deliverables to our, you know, the talent we're attracting and the talent we're placing.
Absolutely.
And I know that was a lot there, but there's a lot on my mind.
I love it. One thought that immediately came to mind, and this is an advice that I hear in the industry a lot. It's like, if you want to stand out, you should niche down and focus on a specific skill set or an industry. So it got my attention that instead of doing that, you're looking to diversify and now add healthcare into your umbrella. What are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think that advice is holds true, or does it come to a point where it makes more sense to expand and diversify.
Yeah. So we tried with our light industrial within the job center at a certain point years ago to do as one of those, I guess, learning opportunities, whether we weren't ready or we just didn't do it right. There was a loss there per se, where we really tried to get into professional staffing, kind of put it all into one. And I realized through that in the high volume recruiting inside of our retail centers, staffing centers on the industrial side, it was really hard to manage that. So dealing with the higher volume, you know, higher frequency of needs from clients. So the higher need for talent on site, amount of volumes of interviews, and just the speed and tenacity of the difference between that, and then kind of translating into more of a interview process versus a direct send. So we tried to mesh it all together and it didn't go well. So what we decided to do was then to focus on the light industrial piece, which is the job center. And then we did create a different brand and portfolio for that delivery. So there's a brand and identity and a deliverable based on specific. So that's where the more talent piece came in. A lot of our clients in the job center were asking for other things to do. And so they needed more talent. So what we decided to do is say, you know what, we do need to create its own identity for us, and it needed to create its own deliverable, its own culture, its own focus. I wouldn't even say niche, but I would say a focus. And so that's where we did more talent. And then this healthcare piece came off of probably a little bit of my competitive nature. I think we've built now this Riley Decker. We have a back office platform. You know, we're trying to build a platform company. And so we have a very, you know, viable back office, payroll, accounts receivable, HR, you know, workers comp. You know, we have a financial team, a data analyst. We've created a back office platform. And then, looking at the industry, Todd and I have an ability to invest forward. So we're going out and, you know, we see healthcare being a viable piece, and we want to kind of take some of our core roots. It's totally different. We've done a ton of research. I've gone out and visited, coming up on like 10 healthcare staffing companies, excuse me. And by the way, the staffing industry is amazing with that. You know, people are so, even though we're creating potentially a competitor, you know, people have opened up to try to support. And I've gone out, I've done a light industrial recruiting my whole career. Right. I would like 14 years into it, coming up on year 15, to try something different. Mm-hmm. And they've been super acceptive and super welcoming and very resourceful and trying to help me guide through that. And, that's been amazing in itself. So that's really where it came from, because we knew inevitably, the changing of the space. It would be great to have different divisions focused on different things. And, that's where we're at, and that's where we're going. And so far so good with our second brand, the more talent piece. That group is really getting up and rolling, and it's fun to watch that group. And then I can't wait for the healthcare.
So each, you know, you're diversifying, but still keeping that focus for each division, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you mentioned back office. Why building your own back office versus looking outside? Should staffing firms consider building their own back office platform for support? What advice do you have in that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's pros and cons to both. From my standpoint, when Todd and I started, that's what he had did previously before he sold in the 90s. And as he spun this back up, you know, that was the drive, was to control pay and bill in our whole industry, because we're affecting people's lives is ever so important. But especially in the light industrial, kind of doing a full front and back office was very important when we spun this thing up in 2008-09. And we've continued on with that. You know, we've had obviously opportunity to outsource and consolidate our back office and outsource it to, you know, from a PEO or different, you know, strategies that we could do, but we haven't. And I think the benefit, so maybe cost-wise, it isn't as the economics maybe don't match up as well, but our size and scope now with our ability to manage and process payroll and do a lot of things that we do, inevitably it allows us flexibility to, I think, deliver to our associates. So if there's a payroll discrepancy and a lot of the different things, we can control that. Obviously there's calculated risk with that, but I think for us, I would say, you know, depending on, I don't think there's, for me, I would recommend not a right or wrong answer. It's what's best for you after you, you problem solve. What are the pros? What are the cons? Size and scope of the entity, you know, all go into play. And I think there's definitely, you know, you got to figure out, my recommendation is what's best for you and your company.
As the saying goes, right? It all depends.
No, it's a, that's a kind of a political answer. I'm usually more of a one way or another, but you know, I think that's the truth, you know, in my opinion, just learning the industry and I know people, I've gained a lot of relationships that do it the way we do it. And there's a lot that, you know, outsource it and usually they have reasons why. And a lot of them are successful organizations. So, you know, I think you can have success in a lot of different ways. And it's just, where do you want to focus? And sometimes it's where you started and what you build, and you want to keep building off of that. And that that decision was made in 2009 for us. And it's worked for us, but that doesn't mean that the way Riley Decker or the Job Center does it means it's the right way.
Right.
I think it's just the way, it's the right way, I believe, for us.
Exactly. Right. And it all depends. And that's why going back to the mission, the vision, the values of the company, it is so important, right? Because that's going to guide your decisions, right? It's going to give you that decision-making framework. And it'll help you realize, oh, this actually doesn't make sense for us, right? It's working for them, but not for us, because this is what we stand for, right? So it makes total sense. Now, I want to make sure, you know, if there's any recruiter listening to this episode, that we touch on that. You know, with technology, the way it's advancing these days, it seems that the recruiter is in this transition. In terms of you're seeing this platform, I guess you would call them recruiterless platforms, right? And there's this notion that the recruiter role might go away. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that and any advice for recruiters looking to, I guess, keep up with this, you know, fast-paced change.
Yeah, well, if any companies, we're looking for recruiters. So if some are going recruiterless, we'll take you.
Exactly.
Shameless plug here.
There you go.
Good recruiter. We'll come on over.
I'll make sure to make the intro.
Right. No, Caesar, I've heard a lot in my time here about how technology is going to take away jobs, right? Whether if it's from our clients, you know, in automotive and manufacturing. No, 100% technology is coming in. It's just changing how we work, you know, and changing some of the jobs from our clients. And then inside from recruiting and managing inside of a staffing organization, as I mentioned, I think we're all want and need to use technology efficiently. But to me, I guess I'm somewhat considered old school. I value relationships, and that's just how we started. You know, it's relationships with the talent that was coming through our doors that we were placing, and then with our clients. I mean, we just had a client event for opening day in baseball here in Cincinnati, where it was great.
I love it.
You know, we've missed that, obviously, that engagement with clients with COVID, and it was fun to see them, you know, hug them, you know, shake, look them in the eye, say thank you in person. Appreciate your business. You know, I think with recruiters, the skill set of delivering that talent to clients, there's going to be a need. At least a need here for our organization. I can't speak upon everyone else's and how they're building their business, but you know, I think I'll always be cognizant of learning, you know, of how people do it. But I guess I'll always, I would always, I guess my ship would sink with valuing relationships and people before I would, you know, go towards the complete automation. But you know, maybe that I become, you know, Best Buy or Radio Shack where other people survive. But yeah. I think to me, it's a hybrid. You know, I think to me, just in my opinion, this is just my thoughts on the industry. You know, I saw a technology company in our space say, you know, the traditional staffing model, those guys are going to go out of business. I've been hearing that for years. Right. And then they're all tech, right? And they just have 100% tech play. Why can't there be something in between? And I think that's what we're seeing in our marketplace. There is value for people. There's intangible, like people. There's a thing about people want to connect with people. You know, in my opinion, I think there's a value add for people, just not technology. And I think there's a huge add for technology. I think the hybrid model of using technology and automation on top of layering in a great recruiter, a great person that can make it still personable and still troubleshoot stuff that a chat bot and a robot and a algorithm can't do. And I think there's something in between both. I don't think it has to be one way or another. And I could be wrong. You know, once again, I've definitely been wrong. I can be wrong, but I would say, you know, where I'm putting the chips on the table for us, it's somewhere in between of making sure you have a strong technology play, but also not devaluing people 100%. When I saw that article, that does bring the fire in my belly, because I think just devaluing, you know, human beings, I think we're special. I think that we're put on an earth. You have a story that you just told. And I think if you're recruiting someone and you're developing a relationship, I want to work for Caesar, not a chatbot. You know, I mean, honest, if I could call Caesar, you know, I want him to be my talent agent. You know, exactly. Of course I would be great to automate some of the technology from Caesar to the talent, no doubt. But at the end of the day, who are you going to work for? Just a complete, you know, robot? Or is it going to be Caesar? Or is it a combination? I think it's that hybrid. So I know that was a long-winded answer, but it's a passionate piece for me, because I started in the staffing industry when, you know, it needed to evolve. Technology needs to come in. There's no doubt about it. Our industry has to evolve. And me being a leader in the industry, I got to be right there with it and enhance technology, invest in technology, believe in technology. But I can't devalue the human being.
I love it. I can feel your passion. And thank you for your answer. And I agree with you. It's all about relationships. Even Steve Jobs has a quote that, you know, ultimately technology is about empowering people, right? And I think there's that's the key there, right? Using technology, yes, to somehow figure out a way where you can create more time to nurture those relationships and automate, you know, what needs to be automated in terms of processes or different steps in the process, but making more time to be that human, to be that person that's looking for a connection, to build community. So we're totally aligned there. And people like the extremes because it creates controversy, and you know, controversy gets clicks on articles on right. Whatnot. But I think it's never black and white, right? There's always this gray. I think that's where we're gonna end up. Again, we could be wrong, right? But if I have to bet, I always bet on relationships and community. Kyle, awesome. Well, so to wrap this episode, what would be your number one takeaway? Let's say if someone were to looking to start a staffing business in either starting a staffing business or maybe becoming a recruiter, right? Because there's a scarcity for recruiters these days. I think I saw a stat that there's more openings for recruiters than software developers, which is nuts to me. So what will be your one of your advice or takeaways that you want to leave off?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one word, aggressive. It's a unique word, but for me, and I think aggressive, say play to win. I think you know, when you start a business, once again, we talked about early on in the episode, was you got to have a vision, right? You have to have, and you got to adversity, you know, a big events. We talk about ERO, events, response equals outcome. Big events are going to happen. When you start a staffing business, you got to understand that, but your relentless pursuit to have a positive outcome has to overcome that adversity or that event. And I think if your R factor, your response is not in line with that overcoming adversity, then you will not be successful. So you need to be have an aggressive mindset and a proactive mindset that adversity is going to hit, and you need to be prepared for that. So what are you going to do financially? What are you going to do with personnel? What are you going to do with whatever the event has that you are, you know, embracing the challenge and the journey? In one, you know, event isn't gonna, you know, take your company down. And I think that's where I would, you know, where I look back and I really, once again, so thankful that we persevered through those tough times. But I knew in my heart, in my head, that we were going to be successful. There was no doubt in my mind. Losing was not an option. Was not. You know, I might lose a battle, but we're not going to lose this war, right? You know, right. Chicago, bad thing, you know,
right.
Was a loss, and we've had many of them, right? But we've won more than we've lost. We're super thankful, and we still make mistakes to this day, but I always say fail forward. And that's kind of the aggressive mindset. And I think in recruiting, we've seen in our new divisions is, you know, being aggressive, you know, like picking up the phone, still make the phone calls, send out the emails, send out the connects, like be engaged. Don't sit back and wait. Nothing good, in my opinion, comes from sit back and waiting. You got to go get it. I think that's where, in my opinion, where the recruiters, you know, I always say the most aggressive wins. And sometimes that doesn't, you know, sit well with others, but I just say, like, you know, I've learned through athletics, either, you know, they're going to win because they're going to go get the ball, right? Or we're going to win because we're going to, you know, get the ball and go score. Right. Someone has to get it and go. To me, that's being, you know, be the first one to present, be the first one to be there, go get it, be aggressive. And I use the word aggressive because I think it's just a mentality of, you know, just putting yourself out there, be willing to fail forward and go out and try to go win. And if you don't, learn and you move on and you keep going, right? And don't stop. And to me, I hope that our industry, man, I love it, Caesar. I love this. I love staffing. That's all I know. So you can tell I'm excited to talk about our industry and talk about whatever I can to help others. And, you know, as I mentioned, so many people have lifted me up, and that's the least I can do for other people in our industry. And I hope they go out there, and if someone jumps in our industry, that they have that, you know, aggressive mentality and they don't quit. Cause I do think there's a lot of turnover because when adversity hits, they're just not ready for it. And recruiting and staffing is not easy. Nothing is easy, but especially right. this industry. And I think people need to know that coming in, but it's incredibly rewarding by changing lives and helping lift others and finding them employment. And you can, you know, create a great livelihood. You can make a lot of money in our industry. So, you know, I think, you know, if you come in and you have the right plan and you're willing to persevere, you're going to do great in this industry. And I hope people come in, and because we need it, we need talent coming into our industry that are having success.
Absolutely. And that's a super relevant advice, especially in this day and age, you know, with the war going on, inflation, and you know, all this, like, I guess, crisis, right? It's important to be aggressive and have a plan. So thanks for that. And I'm new to the industry. Like I transitioned, being in the industry for a little over a year. Not as a recruiter, right? Obviously I'm doing content creation, marketing, but I gotta say, it's one of the, you know, the most caring people, I believe, so far are in the staffing industry. It's incredible, like just how caring, how thoughtful people are, and ultimately, right? There's no higher purpose than helping someone get a job, right? Because from a job, they can do anything, right? Because they have that livelihood. So, yeah. But anyways, thanks so much for being on the show, Kyle, and coming and sharing your journey with us and your expertise. We'll make sure to put in the show notes on the Underdog Podcast. And how can people find you, right? What's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, and would love to. You know, we're releasing a lot of good content, really try to step up and share some of the events that have happened and try to help others. So you can find LinkedIn is we spend a lot of time on creating and trying to help others on that platform. So Kyle Decker, KYLEDECKER, pretty simple, but you know, put that in there. Hopefully I'll populate and find me there at Decker KP on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook as well. So on all those platforms, even I think TikTok now. So I'm trying to keep up with the social platforms the best I can. And we're in all my platforms, you'll see just trying to create the positive content that I see and hear. And the team and I got a great marketing team. You know, we try to create positive content and deliver it And I think you'll see that with all the platforms that I'm on. And inevitably, like you said, there's no better way. And that's why I love the staffing business, to work with people and to try to uplift people. I think it's very fulfilling, and to do it as a job, I think it's a blessing every day.
I agree.
Not too many grays are popping out of this hair yet, but it can be stressful at times, but it's also really rewarding, and really appreciate, you know, you having me on today, and I was glad to join you.
Absolutely. No, thanks for joining the show. And I'll definitely would love to do a follow-up, you know, a couple months or next year, just to see how things are going. And yeah, maybe we can continue the conversation. But for now, thanks so much, everybody, for joining. And I'll see you on the next episode.